Vogel.
Hey, welcome back everyone from the Hanukkah vacation. As Rabbi Amar said, I hope that your batteries are recharged. Yesterday, we had a very special day. Whether you are familiar with yesterday being the eighth day of Hanukkah, not just being the last day of Hanukkah, but more importantly, being a day called Zot Hanukkah. Now, what is this day called Zot Hanukkah? What was the most importance of it? Is there anything that we can glean from yesterday, from celebrating the eighth day of Hanukkah? Is there something that we can take with us for the upcoming next few months until we hit the next Chag? What is it? What is it about Zot Hanukkah? What is Zot Hanukkah? So you might say, if you're a little pessimistic, you might say that Zot Hanukkah is really nothing other than the fact that in the Psukim that we read yesterday in Shacharis, a very long laning that I'm sure almost everybody here was at, I'm sure everybody here was at Shacharis yesterday. So in that laning we said the word Zot Hanukkah, so there's really not much significance to the fact that that the eighth day is called Zot Hanukkah other than the fact that it's written in the Psukim on the Torah laning of that day. However, there's a Pri Chadash. Pri Chadash, one of the commentaries on the Gemara, and he has an interesting take on what Zot Hanukkah is. And he says as follows. He says, Zot Hanukkah is not just the eighth day being an ordinary day or the last day of the Chag, but he really wants to come to answer the famous question of the Beis Yosef, which you've heard, I'm sure, at least seven times over Hanukkah. Probably once a day you've heard this or read an answer to the Beis Yosef's question of why do we celebrate 8 days if the miracle is only for 7 days. So the Pri Chadash comes and he wants to say, you know why we have 8 days of Hanukkah? Because the first 7 days of the Chag, of Hanukkah, were a celebration of the Nes of the Menorah, as it says in the Gemara. Nes of the Menorah. The candles were able to light for such a long time. And the eighth day is a celebration of the battle that the Chashmonaim had against the Yavanim. And that is a special day, a celebration of this. Of one day we're going to take of Hanukkah and celebrate the fact that we won a battle against the Yavanim. The question is, and I saw a beautiful essay by Rav Aaron Lapiansky, the Rosh Hashiva in Silver Spring, Maryland. And he brings his Pri Chadash, and he says he asked a very fundamental question. Very nice, the Pri Chadash says that the last day of Hanukkah was a celebration of the battle against the Yavanim. But what is the significance of lighting the menorah on that eighth day? Light it for seven days, and the eighth day you celebrate, have a suda, have halal, something else. Why are we lighting? So he has a beautiful yisod, and really the yisod is based on a Ramban, a very famous Ramban in Parshas Bo. But he says that the reason why we light the menorah is because, as the Ramban says, doesn't bring this Ramban, but as the Ramban says in Parshas Bo, that mitoch nisim gedolim, as we saw in Yitziat Mitzrayim, we saw a tremendous nisim when we left Mitzrayim. And the Ramban says that the reason why what we're supposed to do is from the big Nisim, from the Nisim Gedolim that we had in Mitzrayim, we're supposed to see the Nisim Ketanim. The everyday Nisim that we go through on a daily basis, we're supposed to see the Yad Hashem in our daily lives. And he says maybe that's the reason, that's the essence of lighting the menorah. The lighting the menorah represented for us the eight days that we went through. The lighting of the menorah represented a recognition of a Kadosh Baruch Hu being able to do things that are supernatural. Doing a nace, a tremendous nace, is supposed to light for 1 day, and it lights for 7 days, it lights for 8 days. That's a tremendous nace, and that's what the menorah represents. But there's another level that we are supposed to recognize. We're supposed to have grown through the Hanukkah holiday. We're supposed to glean is that not just do we recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the supernatural form, but we try to see His Yad, His hand, in our everyday events. And even if a natural event, like a battle between two armies, which obviously was also supernatural, but you could have pinned it on natural events, just like any of the wars that we've had in Israel, they were basically supernatural, but they were still somehow explained in natural terms. So we have to understand that, no, we have to see the Yad Hashem even in our natural lives, even in our daily lives. So when we go into a battle with weapons in a normal way that people go to battle, we have to see the Yad Hashem in that as well. But it only comes through seeing the Nisim Gedolim, then we could also see the Nisim Katanim. We see the supernatural Yad once in a while in Rizocha to see a supernatural Nes of lighting of the menorah, so then we could say, oh, this is the same Hashem that even in the Tevin, every single day, He helps us. And that's what the Pri Chodesh meant, to see the face behind the mask. And that's what was reserved for the eighth day of Hanukkah. The eighth day of Hanukkah is used to recognize, to appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the everyday experiences. And I think this really ties in to the past two parshas, last week's parsha, this week's parsha, focusing on Yosef HaTzadik. This is a little bit what the success of Yosef, what he was about, was also the recognition of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the day-to-day experiences. Seeing him through behind the scenes. How? Imagine for a second, Yosef HaTzadik is pulled from jail. He had a ma'aseh with Eishes Potiphar. He's thrown into jail. The Paro is told that there's this guy, that there's this Nar, this little kid and a servant who can interpret dreams, and he's pulled up. So if you were Yosef, imagine you being Yosef for 1 second right now, and you're pulled up in front of the king. This is your only chance to prove that you are worthy of success. And basically be able to wash away any history, wash away the fact that you were in jail, make sure that you are going to be on top, you're going to be taken care of for the rest of your life. So what would you do? Obviously a person would go and he would pin the success on himself. He would say that, yeah, I'll interpret you the dreams, and it's my success, and you need me to advise you for the rest of your life, the rest of your term as Paro, and you need me. And that way he ensures success for the rest of his life. But Yosef doesn't do that. Yosef doesn't do that. He says, "Elokim yaneh et shalom paro." He says that, I'll help you, but I'm only going to be helped because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that helps me interpret the dreams. You just dropped the ball majorly. Right? This was a success. He's running a tremendous risk at this point in time. He's running a risk to say that, okay, so Paro's going to say, okay, so what do I need this guy? You know, I'll find another chacham that he'll be able to interpret my dreams, or I'll just use him for this one time, and okay, thank you, and you go with your, you know, God-fearing outlook on life, you go on your merry way, and I'm going to go get my regular Egyptians who I have some connection with. And he doesn't do that. Yosef doesn't do that. Yosef goes and he says, Elokim yanez Paro, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that answers all the dreams, and I'm just going to be his aide, I'm just going to be his servant. And in that way, we'll bring the Kvod Shammai. But that was a tremendous nisayon that Yosef just passed. To see the Yad Hashem, to be able to see the Yad Hashem so clearly that he's not even going to be able to hold it back. That even no matter what the cost was going to be, he's going to show the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really running it. The same idea as we had in Zos Chanukah, Yosef HaTzadik brings to the fore in last week's parasha and in this week's parasha. And this idea really comes even more when we look at this week's parasha, the parasha's Vayigash, where Yosef HaTzadik sends a very cryptic message, a strange message to Yaakov Avinu. After the brothers reveal themselves, we're not going to get into that, I'll save that for Older Rebbeim, for the Thursday Shmuz, I don't want to take away the Beis HaLevi from anybody, so we're not going to talk about that now, but when Yosef HaTzadik reveals himself to his brothers, so he sends a message to his brothers, and he says, go back to Yaakov, go back to Father, and tell him that I'm still alive. Now, if you're Yosef, let's play the role again. If you're Yosef HaTzadik, what would you tell? What is Yaakov most concerned about? If he knows that Yosef is a Mitzrayim, what is going to be his main concern? That he's what? If I send you off to some crazy place somewhere in America, right? Some college somewhere where there's no Yiddish guy, right? I had a friend that I went to school with in high school. He went to Duke University. So let's say you go to throw you out to Duke University, right? And you want to send me a message as your Rebbe or your father. What's going to be your message? It's probably not going to be that you are the head of the fraternity, that you are the, you know, president of the student council, whatever it is. That's not going to be the message you'd want to send your father. What's going to be the message? But you're still religious. You're still frum. You're keeping the mitzvahs. That's Yaakov Avinu's concern. But Yosef doesn't do that. What does Yosef do? He sends a message. Tell father, v'yisimeni lav leparo u'la'adon l'chol beito l'moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. That I am the king. Basically, I'm second in command. I'm Moshe b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. I'm a Moshe. Why is that important to Yaakov? Yaakov is not going to be impressed by that at all. And the opposite, he'll probably be very turned off. So what's the message that Yosef is sending Yaakov? So the Sif Seichaim, Chaim Friedlander Zatzal, has a beautiful take on this pasuk. And he says as follows. He says the message that Yosef is sending Yaakov is as follows. How did Yosef become the Moshe? Yosef became the Moshe of Eretz Mitzrayim precisely because he put a Kadosh Baruch Hu before himself. Because Yosef was so selfless and his whole concern was being Megale Kavod Shemayim. How could I show the world that a Kadosh Baruch Hu exists? How can we show the world that a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world? That's going to be my main concern. And that's precisely why Paro picked him as to be the Moshe. It's so counterintuitive that a Na'ar, an Ivri, somebody that has no connection at all to Mitzrayim, would in one day be placed as the viceroy of all of Egypt. It doesn't make any sense. He was a slave. Can you imagine a slave becoming president in one day? It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. So why did Paro do that? Because he saw that Yosef HaTzadik was a Moshe Berucho, somebody that's in complete control of his desires, somebody that has a goal, and an altruistic goal, and he's complete control of it, and that's what he's concentrated on. That's who he wants to be in the second command. Nobody, somebody with ulterior motives for kavod, for other things, that he's not going to be a good ruler. But somebody that puts HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or whatever he feels as the most important, in this case, with Yosef HaTzadik bringing Kavod Shemayim, Paro respected that. And that's what people respect. If you're true to your religion, if you're true to your beliefs, and you're going to always place that as the front, as long as those beliefs are altruistic, so then that's what some people are going to be impressed by. So when Yosef sent to Yaakov Avinu that he became the Moshe, the message was that he stayed true to everything that he believed in. And the Kavod Shemayim, bring honor to Kadosh Baruch Hu, was the main point in his life. That's what he wanted to show. And Paro was so impressed by that even Paro himself was Moda, agreed to Yosef. And that was the message that he was sending to Yaakov, his father. And if you look in this week's parasha as well, he continues with this idea. Yosef, the Rosh Yeshiva once was talking to the to the staff, and he had a similar idea about a few weeks ago. This is where Yosef HaTzadik shows that he's grown tremendously. He used to be a Na'ar, but now he sees a Kadosh Baruch Hu every single day. And every experience that he has, he sees the Yad Hashem. As Yosef says to the brothers, Kadosh Baruch Hu put me in this situation so I can provide for you. You are not the ones that sent me to Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one that sent me here. He made me the other paru. Everything he says, all his experience he went through was trying to show how is the Kadosh Baruch Hu working. How can I show the people that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is really running the world? That is how a Jew looks at life. Every experience that he has, he tries to see the Yad Hashem. When a person tries and goes and lives his life trying to show the world that Yad Hashem exists, he'll be very successful. I saw an amazing story. There was an American Jew that came to Israel many years ago, over a decade ago. He came to Israel, he had a very wealthy businessman, and he had a lot of business to attend to in Yerushalayim. So he woke up in his hotel, he got up early in the morning, and he said he was very hungry, and he went out and said, I wanted to go out to a restaurant quickly to eat before the meeting. It was in the middle of 10 o'clock in the morning, so he goes to King George Street in Yerushalayim, to get some food. So very long line, but Yadavka specifically wanted to go to this place because he liked the pastries there. He's waiting on line. Very long line, he's getting very impatient, he's looking at his watch, and he's saying, hey, he has to get out of here. So the guy in front of him sees that he's being very anxious. And the guy in front of him says, you know, I see that you're in a rush. I'm not really in such a rush. Maybe you want to go in front of me. The American guy was taken aback. And the Israeli was such a nice midos. You know, it doesn't come by so often. He took it upon himself. He took his offer, and they switched places. The guy got his food, ate it very quickly, benched, and went on his way. He was a few meters away down King George, and he heard a major blast. This was in Av. This was in the summertime, 2001. The Sparrow bombing happened on the corner of King George and Yafo. And he was so taken aback that he couldn't believe it. He says, this is such hashkacha pratis, the Yad Hashem, that here, if I would have been in the line right at this guy's place, then I would have been there at the time, just a few meters away. So he says to himself, well, what happened to that guy? This is how a Jew looks at things. It's Yad Hashem. There has to be a reason why I was in this guy's place, but I want to give a karsa toast. I mean, let me find out what happened to him. He runs back to the site, and he can't find the guy. He's scared that maybe the guy, Rahman al-Islam, was killed. He searches for 2 days all of the hospitals. On the last day, he finds the guy in the hospital. Guy, unfortunately, was hurt very badly. And he goes and he sees the son that's by the father, by the victim. The victim has a son, and the son's trying to take care of him. So the businessman says to him, listen to me. He tells the son the story of what happened. He says, I want to pay your father back. If you ever need anything, let me know. Okay, and he goes, leaves Eretz Yisrael, goes back to New York. 3 weeks later, he gets a phone call from the son of the Israeli that was hurt. He says, my father has to go through a major surgery in Boston. Can you help me out? He says, sure, I'll do anything for you. He goes and makes a phone call, calls his contacts in Boston, gets everything arranged that this guy could see the top surgeon in Boston Hospital. So the guy hears that he's coming on a certain date. And Gavir, the wealthy man, says, you know, let me be megalik for Shemayim a little bit more. Let me show my akarsa tov how real ben Torah acts. You know what? Instead of just taking care of everything by phone, I'm going to go to the airport and take the guy to Boston. So he goes and he meets the guy to Boston. He doesn't go to work that day. This guy's office was on the 101st floor of the Twin Towers, and it was September 11, 2001, when he went to go pick up the injured Israeli to bring him to Boston. So if a person sees Yad Hashem in every single aspect of his life, how am I going to be megalik for Shemayim every single time? You don't know what's going to happen. Good things will come to you. This was the message of Yosef, and this is a message of Zos Chanukah. This is a message of the Pre-Chadash. This is a message of these parshios, is that we have to find ways, every single person on their level, we have to find ways, how am I going to see Yad Hashem? How am I going to be Megalik Kvod Shemayim, reveal the honor of heaven in my day-to-day life? And this was the beauty of what we just experienced as a yeshiva this past week in the Chanukah Challenge. Again, a big yashukot to Rabbi Roblowski for bringing the initiative a few years ago already. But the idea was a beautiful idea, and it's the same idea. We have an experience. We have in front of us a week of vacation, a few days of vacation, and a lot of hours, of free hours during the Chanukah break. How can we maximize our potential? What is the most Kavod Shemayim that we can possibly bring? And the answer is through the Chanukah Challenge. We had 91 guys who signed up. That means that even if you didn't get to the 30 hours, or you didn't get to 20 hours, the fact that 91 people in this yeshiva showed that it was important to take part of this initiative is a tremendous accomplishment. They're showing that there is the Kavod Shemayim. Thus far, the tally is 66 people have gone to 30 hours. 30 or 20 hours. 66 out of the 91 guys so far have gone at least to 20 hours. And one or a few of the guys who took out an apartment, whether legally or illegally, in Italian, that's not the point. But the point is that in that apartment, what went on is 8 hours of learning, individual 8 hours of learning in that apartment. That's a tremendous experience. That's a tremendous way of showing. That's a Yosef HaTzadik. That's what the Chashmonaim were all about. How could we maximize Kavod Shemayim in every situation that we're in? So now, what's the post-Hanukkah challenge? We just had our Hanukkah's over. What's our post-Hanukkah challenge? And what about somebody that didn't maybe reach that potential, the 20 hours, the 30 hours, whatever it is? What's the message for us? So we had a Gemara in Brachos and Daf Dalet a few months ago, where it's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us how many jumps, how many steps does a Malach need to take in order to fulfill his mission. So Michael takes one jump and he gets to fulfill his mission in one jump. In two. Eliyahu Hanavi needs four jumps to get to his mission. Anybody that's doing Chazir Brachos in the Hanukkah challenge is a little bit more fresh in this Gemara. Who cares? Who cares if you take one step? What's the significance of one mile taking one, one taking two, one taking four? What's the difference? Who cares? So the Chafetz Chaim says as follows. The Chafetz Chaim says is that what's going on is the message is as follows. What Michal can do in one step, Gavriel needed to do in two. What Gavriel needed to do in two, Eliyahu HaNavi was only able to do in four. But it doesn't matter, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at every single individual, and are you fulfilling your potential? When you are faced with an experience, how are you being Megalik Vod Shemayim? Maybe a guy can do it in one step, very nice. Maybe somebody can do it in two, doesn't take away from the guy. Maybe somebody can do it in four, doesn't take it away from him either. Everybody has their own level of potential. So the post-Hanukkah challenge is going to be, how am I going to look at myself now over these next few months and say to ourselves, me with my own kochot, if I'm a one step guy, if I'm a two, if I'm a four, if I'm a three, whatever it is, but how am I going to assess my potential and be megalek kvod shemayim to the best of my ability? I'll end off with one more story. There was a Baal Tshuva many years ago who was learning in his house. He became a Baal Tshuva. He wasn't yet married, so he was still living at home. And he was learning Gemara. And his father came over to him and said, well, what are you learning? What is this text that you're learning? In those days, they didn't have art scroll. So he's explaining to him, I'm learning Gemara. It's written in Aramaic. It's a little bit different. He says, the father says, let me try. And the son says, no, Dad, you're not gonna be able to do this. You can't just do this in one try. You need a few weeks, a few months, a few years of training in order to really be able to decipher the text here. He says, no, let me try anyway. So the son says, you know what, Dad, okay, we'll try. So they started learning a little bit. He was teaching him the vocabulary, as we're all familiar with. They had the Jastrow, the dictionary, maybe the Sansino for the seasoned, altered Yidden amongst us. The Sansino was the pre-art scroll. So they were learning through the Gemara. And after 2 years, they completed one daf. One daf. After 2 years, the father was able to really understand the shakl of Ataya, the skeleton of the Gemara, one page to the next page, one daf after 2 years. So the father says to the son, you know, I want to make a siyum. The son laughs, says, Dad, you know, you have to finish all masechta. You can't just make a siyum after one masechta. So he says, no, I want to make a siyum. So he says, the son says, you know, I'll ask the rabbi. So they go and they call Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, and they ask Rav Moshe, my father wants to make a siyum. We've been working at this for 2 years. We finished one daf. Can we make a siyum? So the Rav Moshe says, yeah, you can make a siyum after one daf. So he says, not only that, Rav Moshe said, I'm going to come to that siyum. I want to come to that siyum. So Moshe shows up. Nobody can believe that the Gadol Ador at the time, undisputed Gadol Ador, is coming to a siyum for one daf. It's pretty unbelievable. So Moshe comes and he explains the importance that it's not about quantity, it's about quality. That night, the father dies. After he made the siyum, he died that night. Rav Moshe heard about it. Rav Moshe says, I want to come to the Levayim. I want to be masped. I want to eulogize the mace. So Rav Moshe gets up in front of everybody and he starts to cry. And he says, Yesh misha kono olamo, after 300 times of learning Shas, like himself. And he said, Yesh misha kono olamo b'daf echad. And there's somebody that can acquire entire Olam Haba after learning one daf. So it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, the Hanukkah challenge was great and it energized us and we did a lot. And he might have done 30 hours, he might have done 20 hours, and that's gewaldic, that's unbelievable. But you know, the guys who also did an hour and a half and 2 hours and one daf, that's also unbelievable. It's just about, where your heart is. Our job right now, post-Hanukkah, leaving Zos Hanukkah, going into the winter, next few weeks, next few months, is figuring out, just like the Yosef and just like the Chashmonaim, how could we actualize our potential in our day-to-day lives, ultimately bring Kvod Shemayim to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Have a good day.
Well, don't worry, he's not coming Sunday.
Boys, be they Schlepp Seymour.
Yeah.
Ashray, 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 Ashray.